Well, I want to start out tonight's talk with a question for anyone who practices mindfulness meditation. What is mindfulness? We use this word all the time, often without looking closely at what it means. Generally, we think it's something that happens occasionally, maybe during meditation or spontaneously during the day. But we probably don't focus on what it is or what makes it happen. So that's what I want to talk about tonight. Most 30-minute Dharma talks don't really delve into the components of mindfulness. And we can't really do that either tonight, but I want to give you a glimpse of how thoroughly Buddhist scholars have mapped out the mental processes that lead to mindfulness. And this is all contained in a massive collection of treatises that together are called the Abhidharma, or Abhidhamma in Pali. So, what is the Abhidharma? It's part of the great mass of early Buddhist writings that have been collected into one section of the Pali Canon. The canon, or all of the texts containing the essential teachings of early Buddhism, are divided into three categories, or pitaka, just to throw a lot of Pali terms at you. The rules of conduct for monastics are one of them. The suttas, which we study, and the Abhidharma. So this is the third one that we're going to be talking about tonight. Bhikkhu Bodhi said in the 1995 Comprehensive Manual of Abhidharma, "These treatises are attempting nothing less than to articulate a comprehensive vision of the totality of experienced reality." So, everything. This collection is often referred to as Buddhist psychology, or you might just say, how the mind works. Now, there's a mystical aspect to the Abhidharma itself. Early Buddhist tradition said that it had kind of a magical origin because the Buddha dictated it after his death. Modern historians, on the other hand, say the Abhidharma is the work of many scholars over many, many years. Buddhist tradition also says that these treatises were first collected in writing during medieval times by a Buddhist sage called Acharya Aniruddha. And he was so obscure that we don't know where he came from or what century he lived in. But let's look at what the Abhidharma says about mindfulness. Later on, we'll also look at what the Satipatthana Sutta says. That's what most Dharma talks cover, probably because it's so shorter. The Abhidharma says that the occurrence of mindfulness is influenced by up to 52 mental factors. And no, I'm not going to tell you about every one of them, because many of those 52 factors interfere with mindfulness arising. There are 19 of them that are always operating together whenever mindfulness is present. Let's start with the first 7. When teachers offer guidance during mindfulness meditation, they usually start by directing your attention to the experience of the body, which is where the Abhidhamma starts too. Both the suttas and the Abhidhamma say that consciousness occurs when one of the physical senses contacts an object, such as when the eyes see an apple or hands touch it. That's why teachers bring you back to the basic elements of consciousness, body and object, which are always accompanied by a feeling of liking or not liking the object. This happens along with perception, which recognizes that it's an apple based on your past experience. These are the minimum 4 mental factors that let us experience anything. If they sound familiar, it's because these concepts occur repeatedly in the suttas. Then, like Eve, we decide what we're going to do about that apple. Have it for lunch? Learn the difference between good and evil? Or drop it someplace? This is where other mental factors start to come into play. And I have to point out that they're moving at lightning speed, at the rate of mind moments, which is too fast for us even to imagine. In an article that came out on the September 2nd, 2016 issue of The Lion's Roar, titled The Real Practice of Mindfulness, Andrew Olensky notes that choices are made, but there is nobody who makes them. This makes sense when you consider the speed at which these mental factors arise and pass away. Except during meditation, we're usually not aware of choosing where to focus our attention, which is what teachers often guide us to do early in a meditation session. Pay attention to the body. Pay attention to how it feels, etc. The Abhidhamma says it is intention that focuses the mind's attention when it's not your meditation teacher. Finally, mental vitality is the energy that supports the interaction of these factors. And it completes the 7 universal factors that are present in all moments of coherent experience. If we're missing any one of those factors, for example, focusing attention, then our minds are just a jumble and we're not present or functional. Now, the Satipatthana Sutta says to go sit and straighten your posture and then establish mindfulness. Like, voila, we have instant mindfulness. In contrast, the Abhidhamma lays out all the factors that are necessary for mindfulness. And it adds up to those 7 I've covered and 19 more. The Abhidhamma also says that no mind state which leads to liberation and refers to them as wholesome mind states can exist in the same mind moment as an unwholesome one, one that isn't wholesome. So if at any moment you're stewing over, for example, some resentment, it has a hold on your mind. And the wholesome mental factor of mindfulness cannot arise. But as Andy Olensky says, quote, the moment immediately following is a whole new beginning, end quote. And that's why teachers say that when you realize you're lost in thought, don't stew over having been lost. Just direct your attention back to an ever-present physical sensation, like the breath. That lets you hit reset and then go on. The exercise of mindfulness meditation requires all of the 7 mental factors we've covered, especially intention and mental vitality, that got us to sit down, straighten up, and focus our attention. So the other 19 mental factors that go into mindfulness, they always operate together like a single jewel to establish mindfulness. Now, rather than going through all of them tonight, I want to point out a few that convey the character of mindfulness. Mindfulness is equanimous. It has equanimity, which does not mean that it's detached. It's balanced, midway between desire and aversion, without being either. It's accompanied by generosity and loving kindness. Andy says these factors give rise to, quote, a sense of freedom that allows for greater intimacy with experience. This is what enables us to turn and look closely at the resentment we've just let go of. Most people can't imagine doing this exercise, but that's okay. When the mind has become focused, accepting, loving, and unself-centered, mindfulness will make it possible to do that. Mindfulness also has a factor of self-respect and respect for other beings. Reaching into our innate conscience so we know what is the appropriate response to our experience. Like that apple we started out with, I think at this point we've eaten it, but we're still in the garden. This group of 19 mental factors can arise and pass away mind moment by mind moment. Whether we're meditating or going about our business. Mindfulness will be present anytime we think, act, or speak in a wholesome way. You might say that these are the moments when the knowledge of good and evil has led us to be loving, kind, and generous. Through our practice, we train the mind by directing our attention to a chosen object and holding it there, but actually holding it steady is less important than the intention and the effort. When we come back from being lost in resentful thoughts, the best use of this refocused attention is to turn the banished resentment into the new object to investigate mindfully. So this coming back to looking at the resentment that we just got rid of, or whatever other unwholesome mind state we had to banish, that's the art of mindfulness meditation. And Andy says each of these two efforts, turning away from the unwholesome state of mind, and then once we're free of it, investigating it mindfully, is, and I quote Andy, no small challenge. The best way to maintain mindfulness while we study the unwholesome mind state is to focus on the body, like the breath, for repeated mind moments. So, not a minute, just long enough. This keeps you from being thrown back into greed or aversion by memories about whatever attracted you or repelled you from that object. We focus on the body in order to see how that resentment made the body feel with a clear, loving, and equanimous attention. I call this getting out of the story and into the body. We turn off the intellect, no longer looking for explanations, just experiencing the physical sensations caused by resentment. We learn what that unwholesome state of mind made us feel like, dukkha. And we will certainly remember, when we're no longer meditating, that this suffering was caused by that resentment. For whatever length of time we can focus on that physical experience, we are putting mindfulness to one of its highest uses. We are also allowing the resentment to pass away as we comfort that suffering with our compassionate attention. It's natural for unwholesome mind states to come up. So again and again, we intend and endeavor to abandon them and also to prevent their rising again. This practice purifies the mind. It's the part of the Eightfold Path called wise effort. Now, in 2019, from November 3 to December 15, I gave a series of four Dharma talks on the Satipatthana Sutta, or the four foundations of mindfulness: body, liking or disliking, mind, and Dharma. And for a little while longer, they're on the Sangha's website, and then they'll be on mine. The Satipatthana Sutta is the other main text, besides the Abhidharma, that defines mindfulness. It has a refrain that's repeated very frequently, as if to keep bringing the practitioner back to a recognition of what mindfulness entails. This refrain says we need to contemplate each one of the foundations of mindfulness with an attitude that's, quote, diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world, end quote. This refrain doesn't contain the whole list of the Abhidharma mental factors that give rise to mindfulness, but it does give a good summation of them. The refrain certainly does not mean that we can't experience mindfulness until we're fully enlightened. It means we're observing these four facets of human experience with directed energy, understanding, and equanimity. And we nurture those wholesome mental factors that combine into mindfulness, either in daily life or during formal meditation, by intentionally creating the conditions that let these mental factors arise. We already practice with the big ones: equanimity, generosity, diligence, etc. For those mind moments when mindfulness is present, Andy says, we feel as if we're, quote, stepping back and observing, end quote. That stepping back, I find, usually includes several mind moments of a joyful sense of freedom. While we are mindful, we cannot act or speak unethically by intentionally harming other beings. But it just takes one mind moment of an unwholesome factor, like hatred, for mindfulness to vanish. With mindfulness present, we can recognize and cut off the thoughts, emotions, and impulses that make us unhappy and move us to make others unhappy too through our unmindful actions. When we practice mindfulness, we also cultivate the conditions for wisdom to arise. It can come like a flash of light that suddenly lets us see that all we strive for or avoid is impermanent and causes dukkha when we take it personally. Wisdom shows us how thoughts of I, me, or mine entrap us in dukkha and which way freedom lies. Gradually, wisdom guides and transforms the mind so that it's increasingly impervious to unwholesome mind states. Eventually, when we have uprooted their causes, we become entirely liberated from them and the dukkha they've caused. As our practice continues, the mind transforms like a lotus. It's rooted in the muck of the uncontrolled mind. But with training, the mind rises through gradually purer water until it blossoms completely clean into the air, reaching for the sky. Thank you.